Our scripture reading for this morning will come from the book of Acts, chapter 28, beginning with verse 1. Acts of the Apostles, chapter 28, beginning with verse 1, and I'll be reading from the New American Standard Bible. When they had been brought safely through, then we found out that the island was called Malta. The natives showed us extraordinary kindness, for because of the rain that had set in and because of the cold, they kindled a fire and received us all. But when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, a viper came out because of the heat and fastened itself on his hand. When the natives saw the creature hanging from his hand, they began saying to one another, "Undoubtedly this man is a murderer, and though he has been saved from the sea, justice has not allowed him to live." However, he shook the creature off into the fire and suffered no harm. But they were expecting that he was about to swell up or suddenly fall down dead. But after they had waited a long time and had seen nothing unusual happen to him, they changed their minds and began to say that he was a god. Now in the neighborhood of that place were lands belonging to the leading man of the island named Publius, who welcomed us and entertained us courteously 3 days. And it happened that after the father of Publius was lying in bed, afflicted with recurrent fever and dysentery, and Paul went in to see him, and after he had prayed, he laid his hands on him and healed him. After this had happened, the rest of the people of the island who had diseases were coming to him and getting cured. They also honored us with many marks of respect, and when we were setting sail, they supplied us with all we needed. At the end of 3 months, we set sail on an Alexandrian ship which had wintered at the island and which had the twin brothers for its figurehead. In today's reading, Paul and Luke and Aristarchus, as well as the rest of the 276 people on board the ship, have washed up on an island. Their cruise has been one that nightmares are made of. I wonder how we would respond to similar circumstances. I have written on the marquee, wet, marooned, and snake bit, yet all part of God's plan. The title of my lesson is Marooned on Malta, with a subtitle of How to Handle Adversity. If you look at a map of the Mediterranean, it's not hard to find Italy because you look for the shape of a boot on the western, northwestern side of the Mediterranean Sea. The boot seems to be kicking a football, which happens to be an island called Sicily. And some 58 miles to the south of Sicily, belonging to that same country, is Malta. It may or may not appear on the map, at least not very big. Malta is actually a series of islands called the Maltese Islands, but Malta itself is the larger of the group, and it is 17 miles long and 9 miles wide. Now that's approximately 153 square miles. 6.6 of those would fit into Chaffee County. Did you know Chaffee County is 1,015 square miles? I didn't realize our county was that big. So Malta is not a very big island. Its main natural resource is limestone. They have built many fortifications out of that limestone that they quarry on Malta. Going for Malta is that it has, and this may be a tourist attraction kind of motto, the best climate in the world. It has 8 months of summer. Even winter has lows of 45 degrees and highs of 68 degrees. during the day. Rain mainly occurs in winter. Do you remember the movie with Humphrey Bogart, The Maltese Falcon? Well, Malta does have the peregrine falcon, which happens to be the fastest living creature. When it dive bombs a pigeon, it can reach speeds above 200 miles per hour. Pity the pigeon that becomes its target. During the time of Paul, Malta was inhabited by Phoenicians. They are the ones that are being called natives. And in the Greek, to be fair, even though the Greek word for native is barbaros, from which we get our word barbarian, they are civilized. It simply means anyone that is called barbaros is not Greek speaking. But I came across a poem by T.S. Eliot that talks about Phoenicians, as well as Fortnite, which we had as our lesson for last Sunday afternoon. If you stuck around after lunch, you remember what a fortnight is. A fortnight is a two-week period, which is how long the storm lasted. Perhaps the natives would have assumed that the way this cruise has gone for this Alexandrian ship that Paul and Luke and Aristarchus, as well as the rest of the passengers, have been on, would have ended more like this poem. It's a short poem by T.S. Eliot. Phlebas the Phoenician, a fortnight dead, forgot the cry of gulls and the deep sea swell and the profit and loss. A current undersea picked his bones in whispers as he rose and fell. He passed the stages of his age and youth, entering the whirlpool. Gentile or Jew, O you who turn the wheel and look to windward, consider Phlebas, who was once handsome and tall as you. That poem is entitled Death by Water. It might be subtitled A Warning to Merchant Sailors. What's happened to Phlebas? Well, he's gone under. And for 2 weeks, he's been in the sea and his bones are being picked clean. So beware, you sailors. That's probably what the natives, the barbaros, anticipated for a ship that suffered the fate of Paul, Luke's, and Aristarchus's ship. Adversity happens, doesn't it? And what we want to focus upon today is what Paul and his companions have endured. While we were college students, Colleen and I, in Abilene, we were introduced to a large degree to things that were going on in the missions department. We were interested in going to Australia. Did go to visit, but not for an extended stay. One of the things that they recommended was for all of their mission students to go on some sort of survivalist camp. And the favorite one was entitled Wilderness Trek. Do you know about Wilderness Trek? Oh, sure you do, because it's a local program, isn't it? And years ago, it was sponsored even, or at least encouraged by the church here, when Bobby Wood was running Wilderness Trek. Colleen and I, in 1980, went on a wilderness trek and slept in this church building one night. And on this wilderness trek, it was in May, we trekked in snowshoes, those that could be issued a pair of snowshoes. They ran out before they got to me. I got to wear mukluks. We trekked, some of us with a 70-pound pack, up the south side of Game Trail into the foot area of Mount Harvard, and the snow was deep. I can remember the snow was above the handles on the bridges that cross the stream. That was a survivalist camp. What are such things supposed to encourage? Well, it introduces you into hardship, and it's supposed to be character building. And our trip had its challenges. One of the girls on the trip, while glissading, broke her femur, and we had to carry her down on a makeshift stretcher. And then after we got down, there used to be a trailer parked where our current water pump house is out there, a trailer that was used for classrooms. Sybil and others will remember that. She died. She had an aneurysm that burst. She knew about it before she took the trip, but coming down, and I don't know if it was altitude changes or just what, she died. That's called a survival trip, when one of the members of the party does not survive and another suffers a broken femur. Life can be like that. How's yours been? Is it smooth or bumpy? Sunshine or storm? Full or lean? Here Paul and his companions, because they didn't listen to Paul, remember last week he did and I told you so, are wintering on an island, at least where they landed, with no harbor. Their ship is gone, torn to shreds, no cargo, no grain. But the positive in all of this, all 276 of them are safe and sound. So as we begin today's reading, they are huddled around a fire built for them by the natives, but wet and cold. Things are looking up. This is no way to run a cruise or a mission trip, is it? You know what the word Malta means? It means honey. Yeah, Malta's like honey, and they are the fly in the ointment. How do you handle adversity? How do you respond to hard times? Our character, or lack thereof, will determine our responses. I'm going to have five quick suggestions on how to handle adversity. They're very much what I would call spiritual common sense. The first one is trust in the Lord. Throughout all of this, what has Paul remained? Confident of his deliverance. After all, Paul has been told he will go to Rome. God is sending him to Caesar. And so he knows he's going to live through this. He writes to the Philippians from that prison in Rome. He's going to write four prison epistles. He's going to write Ephesians and Colossians and Philippians and Philemon. In Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13, he gives us his motto, I can do all things through Christ, or through him who strengthens me. If we will but trust that the Lord is in control, our attitude will be vastly different in the time of trial. Turn with me to hymn number 464.
Do me day by day and with each passing moment, strength I find to meet my trials here, trusting in my Father's wise bestowment. I've no cause for worry or for fear. He whose heart is kind beyond all measure gives unto each day what he deems best. Lovingly, it's part of pain and pleasure, mingling toil with peace and rest. Every day, the Lord himself is near me with a special mercy for each hour. All my cares he fain would bear and cheer me. He whose name is Counselor and Power, the protection of his child and treasure, is a charge that on himself he laid. As thy days thy strength shall be in measure. This the pledge to me made. Help me then in every tribulation, so to trust thy promises, O Lord, that I lose not faith's sweet consolation offered me within thy holy word. Help me, Lord, when toil and trouble meeting, ere to take as from a father's hand, one by one, the days, the moments fleeting, till I reach the promised land.
There's an old country song, "One Day at a Time." Trust in the Lord. Remain confident, Paul would say to us. You can do all things by His strength. The second admonition or encouragement to how does one handle adversity is shake it off. You say, oh, I get it. You're using the imagery of Paul shaking that snake off into the fire. I did a study to see if there were still vipers on the island of Malta, and there is one. It's called a cat snake that's there currently, but it doesn't have the venom power to kill a person. It kills rodents, mice, and rats, and birds, and things like that. So some theorize that this particular snake that Paul found in the wood was actually brought over with wood from Africa, where there are poisonous vipers. The island of Malta is encouraging me to think about a cruise to the islands. That's not been my thought of what a cruise would be that would be enjoyable. In fact, we did go to an island, but it was off the coast of Seattle. Victoria Island, and it's not to sit on the beaches, but to cruise through the cities and the gardens, at least at Victoria. I think it would be neat to see Malta. Malta currently has nearly 500,000 people in that small 153 square mile area, with, like I said, many of the buildings being composed of limestone blocks, so it has almost a monolithic color to it if you see it in a tour video. I encourage you to do that. Look at a tour video of the island of Malta. To me, it's appealing to perhaps go see that. We're going to be about 600 miles away from that on our trip to Turkey and the Aegean Sea in June. We are going to get to go to Crete, and that's where Paul, if you remember, and Aristarchus and Luke were taken by the storm for 600 miles, more than 2 weeks' worth of storm before being marooned on the island of Malta. But shake it off. Paul doesn't seem to be fazed by that viper fastening onto his hand. Now the natives see it as poetic justice. He must be a murderer. He survived the sea only to die by snake bite. This is one bad dude, they might have said. But Paul seems unconcerned. I think it's also interesting that this is Paul's introduction to the natives. It's the snake in the grass, like the snake in the Garden of Eden, is God implying that his man has power over evil because he's not affected? Well, certainly the miracle has that effect upon the natives. That's the first sign that they have of showing Paul respect. He goes from just one of many, from a murderer even, to being one who is considered to be a god. Now, that is certainly overboard. But the stage has been set, and we know from reading clear through verse 11 that they're going to be on this island for 3 months. The stage is set. The spotlight has centered upon the Apostle Paul, and perhaps what he has to say they will listen to because of this miracle of not, it's almost like a negative miracle, a miracle of not falling dead after being bitten by the viper. So first, trust in the Lord. Remain confident in your faith. Shake off what adversities come your way. Don't get overwrought. Third, remain positive. Don't complain. Don't criticize. Don't second guess God's plan. Paul says to the Philippians again, this time in chapter 2, verses 14 and 15, do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent children of God above reproach in the midst of the natives, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world. It was clear that Paul was different, and his lifestyle was different. The natives, we've seen their response. What might have been the response of those other passengers aboard ship? Is Publius aware, I think he is, of what has happened to the Apostle Paul? Paul is a light, isn't he? He's gone from being a man who offered advice that no one listened to one who has been heeded so much so that even when it came time to escape the ship, he said, don't get in the lifeboat. And they cut away the boat. Every man for himself as they went overboard, and every man was saved. Here he gets to shore, wet, marooned, and now snake bit. What's God doing? He's supporting his man and his word, saying this is a man to not simply be reckoned with, but to be listened to. Trust in the Lord. Shake it off. Remain positive. Fourth, turn your attentions to others and seek to serve. If one minimizes their own troubles, then we can get our minds to be receptive to the needs of others. If you focus upon the things that are bad, you will be grumbling and complaining. Your attitude will become negative. But you become absorbed in the things that are happening to you. Poor, poor, pitiful me. Instead, do your best to minimize your troubles, and the best way to do that is to seek to serve. Look to others and to their needs. You begin, and that's similar to the nurses in hospitals, especially in combat units, who give themselves wholly to those needs of those that are around them, tired and weary and yet fulfilled, because they focus not upon themselves but upon what they can do to relieve the needs of others. And so Paul is entertained, and Luke uses the term us twice when they go to Publius's house. He invited us and we stayed for 3 days, and I wonder who the us is. I don't think it would likely be all 276 of the crew, but I might be wrong in that. I think it certainly includes Luke and Paul and Aristarchus, and perhaps even Publius is with them, since he is the apparent leading soldier of this crew. But he entertains them for 3 days, which is awfully nice of Publius. I'm going to talk about him this afternoon. But he has a sick father, and Paul, looking to the needs of others, heals his father. And then he begins to heal all manner of diseases upon the island amongst the natives. Finally, after seeking to serve, the best way to handle adversity is to take the long view. Look past today. The song was Day by Day. It's easy to get absorbed in this day's troubles without thinking about what God has in store. You know, we have the same advantages as the Apostle Paul of being able to see into the future. Our God is in control, and He will work all things together for good to them that fear Him and are called according to His purpose. If we, like Paul, will but remain faithful, we will be lights in a dark world. Paul had already written to the Corinthians before this incident on Malta these words in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, beginning with verse 9. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weakness, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. How do you handle adversity? Trust in the Lord. Shake it off. Remain positive. Seek to serve. And take the long view. In this passage to the Corinthians, Paul says, I am content with weaknesses because that allows Christ's power to make me strong, to shine through me. Not by might, not by wisdom, not by wealth. That's not what I need to glory in. But let him that glories glory in this, that he knows the Lord. Let's walk in him. Marooned on Malta, it's kind of a fun aside, if you will, on this journey to Rome. And Paul could have easily said, Lord, this really wasn't a well-planned cruise. I had no idea all of this was going to transpire. You told me I was going to get to Rome. It'd been nice to at least have a hint that I was going to be snake bit along the way. God had told him about the storm and losing the ship and all the cargo, but for some reason had not enlightened him about the viper that would arise out of the sticks and out of the fire and bite him. Satan would do that to all of us if he could. Come right out of the fire and slay us spiritually. Our God, we must trust in him. We must take whatever Satan throws our way and shake it off, remaining positive in this life, seeking to serve others, taking the long view that we are here but for a little while. And then we go on to glory, to be with God. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God, above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world. Marooned on Malta, just an island time.